Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Political junkies would know the name Graham Frydenberg, but unlike political leaders, great speechwriters often exist somewhat in the shadow of their leaders. Can you tell us a little bit about why you made the film? Is it for these kind of reasons?
Look, there were several reasons why I made the film. I think it's really critical that we re-engage with the political process. I think there's a lot of cynicism about politics right now, and a lot of that, I might add, is quite justified when you look at the recent behaviour. Basically, I want people to re-engage, and the point of view of a staffer, people working behind the scenes, hasn't really been covered in a documentary before. So I wanted to show the kind of the intelligence and the thought that goes on behind the scenes of politics. And Graham has got this mighty mind. He's been hugely influential in articulating progressive policies over 50 years. And I wanted a chance to get that on camera.
According to Frydenberg, he says in your documentary, it's important that a speech is more than a succession of one-liners. In comparison to Hamlet, is not a series of quotations. He goes on to suggest that a good speech has an argument, so it is not just merely rhetoric that sounds good for the news bulletin. Now, he talks a lot about writing speeches as being taking part in history. Do you think that there is a civic importance of communicating to an audience that's undervalued at this time?
Oh, absolutely. What's happening is I think we're becoming more entrenched in our positions and we're losing the ability to be able to argue and articulate and go back and forth. It's the discourse that's lacking right now. People state a position and then there's a full stop. Now, part of that's due to the demands of media with its emphasis on sound bites, but in that process, in kind of reducing complex political arguments down to a slogan, we've lost the ability to sit back and argue out different points of view, discuss different points of view. And, you know, we have to learn how to live together. The planet's melting. You know, we've got to be able to live with disagreement and keep trying to do something to fix it.
Now, in the documentary, Graham talks a lot about, as a political speechwriter, that he's never alone, that he always has a relationship with the leader whom he's writing for. Can you talk a little bit about this relationship between the leader and the speechwriter?
When he was referring to that, he was talking about the person he was working for. He was also talking about his cultural ghosts, in a way, you know, Shakespeare, Lincoln, sort of big orators that have influenced his work. But Graham is probably most well known for his long relationship with Bof Whitlam, and that was probably his prime working relationship. I mean, it lasted way after Gough Whitlam was in politics, and in fact, Graham was known as Whitlam's ghost. That relationship kind of developed over many years, working together in opposition, and it lasted until Gough Whitlam died. And they were sort of like two sides of the same coin. They were very different sorts of people, but there was a great love and mutual respect between them. So when Graham's writing a speech, he has to get inside the heads of the people that he's writing for. And as Bob Hawke said, when Graham would present them with a speech, he always made it sound as though it was their words, their own words. So that very nature of it means that a really good speechwriter or a speechwriter like Graham, there has to be a closeness between the leader and the speechwriter. It's not just a matter of knowing the policies and the politics, but how they would phrase things. The very nature of the job requires a closeness, I think, particularly for the sort of speeches that Graham wrote.
Frydenberg's work patterns might be described as unorthodox by some. he's known for having a fair bit of liquid inspiration, and he's known for working well into the nocturnal hours. It certainly wasn't the 9-to-5 job that so many people take. Like, what was he like as a subject for a documentary?
He's great. Let me just put the drinking thing into perspective. He's sort of really big drinking days. They've been over for quite some time. He's now 84. That puts a certain limit on what you can consume. And he didn't drink at all while we were working together. I think we went to the pub once after one of the interviews, but that was the only time. He's great. He's a charming, lovely guy. And I've known him all my life. Not very well. He was a friend of my father's, but it wasn't as though I was making a film about a stranger. He's an absolute pleasure to work with. We started work at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which is when he's sort of just starting to get up, and we'd go for a couple of hours. In his heyday, he'd basically roll into work early afternoon and work all night. But, you know, you just adjust. It is funny, though, that he's sort of the 9 o'clock for everybody else is about 3 o'clock for Graham.
Well, and Bob Carr in the documentary actually mentions, well, he never missed a deadline, that when it came to his work, he had the precision that he always executed the task.
I think he made his own way, and because they knew they could rely on him, not just for never missing a deadline, but for brilliance of writing, they let him be. And it's the best way with someone like Graham. He needs a lot of time to reflect and think out the words, and then he can dash them out.
I can understand that. I mean, whenever I'm writing or scripting things during the sort of busy afternoon hours, it's actually quite frustrating. There's phones ringing. Your ideas just don't form just because you don't have the sort of the luxury to be able to actually concentrate on something in this detail that you really required. So Freudenberg seems somewhat now divided about the way his craft is practiced. He feels that there's been a bit of a loss of authenticity in politics, that it's become sort of increasingly scripted. Talked a little bit about the sort of rhetoricity of, you know, terms like excess of evil, use of sex, sell the second Gulf War, and he mentions that the rise of Donald Trump may well be a sort of reaction to that.
I think it's also the changes in technology as much as anything. His real point is we actually have to engage with those processes, not wring our hands. We're not back in the good old days. Technology's wrought as many changes as the printing press did, or other big kind of revolutionary changes in the way we all talk to each other, but we can't turn our backs on it.
So that's an interesting point. I mean, because he talks a lot about the old town hall meetings, the ones with Menzies, and any member of the public could turn up to the town hall and they could heckle Menzies, and Menzies would generally have a pretty good warm liner to try and deflect that sort of comment. Do you think the rise of social media, that we've sort of lost some of that intimacy of the old sort of town hall meetings? Or is it more that we just need to work out different ways of getting technology to have a more sort of two-way conversations?
Look, it's just different, I think. We have lost some of that rough hewn intimacy, if you like, of the town hall meeting. But we've also degenerated into a lot of personal attacks and personal abuse as well. And I still keep getting back to this point. It's the argument that we need to be working on. When you're looking around at a lot of the journalism these days, there's not a lot of argument. It's entrenched positions and personal attacks.
And that probably explains a lot of the sort of disengagement at the moment. So you'd say that part of the reason that there's a bit of discontent is that many speeches at the moment maybe lack a sort of solid idea base on which, you know, they could sort of communicate their passion.
I mean, we've got to get away from the personal a bit and get back to policies and ideas. And also, there's a lot of self-righteousness going on in the press, and I think it's about just getting back to living with differences as well. Look, I'm utterly convinced that I'm right about my political opinions, but that's not helping anybody. The thing is to convince other people, or to accept that other people don't necessarily share my opinions as well, even if I find their ideas offensive. You know, we've got to learn how to live together.
And it's interesting that in the documentary, Graham talks about being part of the crowd and listening into the sort of conversation and how that could also feed his speech writing, that in a way you're actually sort of tapping into the sort of vernacular rather than merely writing words writ on large.
Yeah, that's true. He does have a really good ear, and his writing is actually, when you read his speeches, they're not sort of flashy or teased up. They're very eloquent and quite simple because his speeches were made for audiences, and they've got to be able to reach out to people, and that's one of the reasons why his speeches still are amazing after all this time. They're appealing to the intelligence of the listener and trying to persuade them through argument, not through a series of cliches or slogans or anything else.
Abraham Lincoln looms as a major inspiration. Freudenberg admiring him, not just for his oratory, but also for his pragmatism of being able to sort of bend events to his purposes by the use of reason.
Yeah.
Now, in the documentary, you include quite a few of the greatest orators. You've got a fair bit of Lincoln, you've got Edmund Burke, you've got Disraeli. Can you tell us a little bit about why you decided to include some of these figures in the film?
Look, Graham's study is full of all of these statues of figures from the past. And also his library as well, Shakespeare, Lincoln. These are all big thinkers who have had a huge influence on him. And the whole film is really about, I wanted people to feel like they'd spent a night inside Graham's mind. And Graham's mind is made up of all of these thinkers. And he talks about recycling and building on the past and taking these ideas and applying them. They've been a huge part of his own development. And it gave me a wonderful opening for the film, you know, in terms of drawing on all of these other big speeches and big thoughts from around history.
Yeah, I mean, he does talk a lot about the sort of literary inspirations, and he talks about how the John of Gaunt speech, he talks about Shakespeare, also Dante, Lincoln, Whitlam always loved to draw on the end of Inferno, and I can remember seeing him at an event where Whitlam did the final part of Paradiso. Do you think that that sort of social humanistic element of a really rigorous education, do you think that that may be part of the reason why we are not hearing that from our more contemporary leaders?
I don't know. Look, honestly, I don't know. Graham was self-taught. He did do some uni, but basically he's taught himself. He's got a super, super smart mind, and he's a really interesting thinker. But one of the things I love about Graham's mind is it's the applied side of thinking that he's interested in that he's interested in the power of words to change lives and articulate policies which go on and affect people. So his first love, I think, has been politics in a lot of ways. And it's sort of, I mean, somebody wrote about the scribe and said it runs the risk of giving politics a good name. And by that, I don't mean some sort of sappy, sentimental kind of view of, you know, perfect politicians, but the actual importance and it, dare I say, honourability of politics as a profession. You know, I don't know if it's just a good classical education, because I think now, particularly with the internet, that sort of knowledge can be open to anyone who's curious and who wants to engage.
Now, Graham's written so many great speeches. There's the Vietnam War anti-conscription speech. There's the It's Time stump speech. There's the Impotent Pure. There's the Gallipoli speech. Do you have a favourite Freudenberg speech?
Look, I'd have to say It's Time. I mean, I know it's been done to death, but when you read It's Time, it seems so revolutionary in terms of where we are today with politics. It was a blueprint for government, and it maps out the sweeping social changes that were going to take place. And it's about equality. And I suppose if I had to summarise my own politics, it would be equality of opportunity, which sounds really easy in one sense. But when you think about what do you have to do to get equality of opportunity, you need to invest in education. You need to invest in housing. You need to invest in social welfare for a start. And It's Time is such an eloquent blueprint for government. I think that would be my favourite. There's parts of other speeches that I'm particularly attached to, but if there was one document, rereading it, when I started making this film, I hadn't read It's Time for quite a long time, probably 10 years. And it's kind of breathtaking. It's not only announcing the series of politics, it's going through the arguments as to why those politics matter. And I think Graham keeps talking about this in the film. It's the argument and developing and articulating the argument that's really important. And I think that's what we've lost. I mean, Donald Trump just lets a stream of consciousness go. He's not interested in an argument. He's interested in personal attacks, abuse, bullying, vilification. But there's no argument as to why he's taking the position.
And I think Graham's been quite modest, but in the documentary he says friends and flukes were the making of him, talking about how he got his first job working for Arthur Calwell.
Yeah.
It was a sort of good fortune.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for any people that wanted to get involved as a political writer on how they should engage in the process?
Maybe this advice is, first of all, work out what your politics are. What is it that you want to articulate? That's a really good starting point, because it's not just about being a gifted writer. It's understanding the politics. And one of the things that I like about Graham is that he's not some sort of lofty theoretician sitting up there in his ivory tower writing words for other people to say. He's as fascinated by the brass-knuckle realities of impacting change and getting things done, i.e. politics. So that high and low version, as he says in the film, the man with the vision, or the person with the vision, that is also the one that's got to go and get the votes. Getting votes is the essence of democracy. There's nothing wrong with that. It's about persuading people to vote your way. So for a speechwriter, I would say work out what it is you actually want to articulate. Because you're not just a mouthpiece for other people's words. It's a fusion. It's your ideas and their ideas as well. And if you do want to be involved in politics or behind the scenes or in power, presumably you care about the way that power is used to affect change. So work out what it is you want to say first.